We're here in studio with Marilyn Schlitz, PhD, who's truly a scholar and not just a bright mind and scientist, but also a huge heart. She's focused on transformation and living a life of just absolute authenticity and exploring the inner space as well as the outer space. And her most recent book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life, that she wrote with Cassandra Vieten and Tina Amarok, is a marvelous one. I want to drill down on it a little bit because you spoke to some amazing people to compile this book. People like Ram Dass and Jerry Jampolsky and Houston Smith and George Leonard and Angelus Arian, all these amazing people. How are you able, first of all, to get their attention in this?
Well, one of the advantages of having been in the field for a long time and working in an organization that has really championed these kinds of ideas is that, you know, we're a community and community supports community. One of the things that, you know, we did a 10-year research program and it consisted of a set of steps. The first, after Richard Gunther had come to me to describe his own transformational experience, we began to look into the medical and scientific literatures about transformation, the kind of experience he reported. And almost entirely, it was considered to be pathological. It was psychotic or delusional or in some way dysfunctional. And yet when you listen to Dick Gunther's story about how it had improved and imbued his life with greater meaning and depth, that certainly didn't sound pathological to us. So we began to kind of collect stories from people about their own transformational journey and collected hundreds of people's experiences of how they had undergone a kind of consciousness transformation. We then convened three focus groups, and the focus groups were made up of leaders of transformational training programs, largely in the Bay Area. Some people came from further. And one of the things we saw is that even these leaders were hungry and eager to have community, to talk about these kind of concepts that they'd been exploring in their work, but really hadn't brought that lens of science to, you know, discriminate and begin to calibrate some of what they were observing in their practices. We then went into depth, and that's the basis of this Living Deeply book, is interviews with 60 masters from different world traditions. So some of the people you mentioned are the more famous ones. It's, you know, the many who you've never heard of that also enrich and deepen our understanding. And so what we did is to convene, you know, two-hour interview sessions with each of these masters and to look from their different traditions at, you know, the differences between their practices, for example, as well as the commonalities and what were the threads or the perennial aspects across these different traditions that might shed light for each of us about how we can invite change into our lives, how we can really maintain and sustain the kinds of intentions. You know, we all make New Year's resolutions, like almost everybody makes a New Year's resolution, and almost all of those people forget what the resolution was by the end of January. You know, sometimes that adage about the road to hell is paved with good intention. How do you begin to really shift those intentions into meaningful, sustainable actions in your life? And so that was what we were trying to get at from these different teachers, is not only what triggers these kinds of changes in transformations of consciousness, but how do you live a practice? What are the qualities when you talk to a Catholic priest and a pagan witch and a, you know, Buddhist Roshi and a Islamic imam? Obviously, their practices look very different. And yet what we were able to find in the course of the research was that they shared some fundamental qualities in common. And so we began to understand and define what constitutes a transformational practice. It was intention, bringing my intention to change, taking the pain or the suffering or the joy and the opportunities of my life and growing into those, bringing my intention to it. It's where I put my attention. Many of the transformational practices are really about cultivating capacities to either focus our attention in new ways or to expand our attention so that we begin to recognize that oftentimes we wear blinders and our culture gives us blinders, particularly if you grow up in a culture that only emphasizes the material, physical aspects of reality. What about those things inside us that give us the most meaning and purpose? The third aspect that these different practices had in common was repetition. And again, building on what we know from the neurosciences, we know that our brains lay down patterns as a result of our habitual behaviors. Well, if those are dysfunctional behaviors, then our brain begins to reinforce those behaviors and we do them more and more. these kinds of transformations in consciousness invite us to build new habits, habits that ultimately invite us to greater happiness, greater wholeness, greater sense of contentment, invite in gratitude and forgiveness and compassion, some of these kinds of qualities. And then the fourth aspect of practice that they had in common was some kind of guidance. Many of the people emphasized how important it is to have a teacher. In the same way, if you are doing weight training and you want to develop a particular muscle group, it helps to have a coach. Well, people talked about these spiritual teachers in the same way. But it was also important to distinguish that guidance can come not only from outside, that external authority who's going to tell me how to live my life, but one of the beauties of these different practices is that it invites you to find a place of quiet and silence and inner authority such that you become your own guide to your own transformational journey. And so all of those four qualities, you know, wrapped in the arms of surrender, become sort of the elements of what each of us can bring to any practice, from driving to work in the morning to tending our rose garden. How do those become opportunities for transformation?
We're here with Marilyn Schlitz, who's giving us a breakdown on how to go about transformation, or what the various transformational practices are that they all have in common. Some of them we could call them religions in some cases, but they all drill down into things in common. So whether we have a particular religious belief, or we're more of a free agent and not on one particular team that we've identified with a particular religion, this is what they all have in common: intention, attention, repetition, and guidance. And the guidance now comes not only from the outer form with coaches, but internally, and which is also really empowering. And you mentioned specifically, you know, wrapped around surrender, which I'm not sure if surrender's gotten a bad rap in our culture, because that's typically the loser waves the red flag and surrenders, which, and we all like to be winners, you know. So how do you define surrender here? Because obviously Jesus the Christ talks about surrender. It's one of those it's one of those things that is certainly easier said than done.
Well, the transformational teachers that we interviewed, and we also conducted surveys with almost 2,000 people now. And so, you know, the kind of qualities that they speak of are the capacity to hold paradox. And so on the one hand, we have this effortful striving, which we call intention. We bring our will and our sort of volition to accomplishing goals in the world. And, you know, oftentimes we set out with a goal and then we can be disappointed if we didn't get to exactly where we aimed for. In this holding of paradox, you also see that success is defined by our capacity to live into what emerges. So you can direct your intention, and then at some point you need to yield to the form it's going to take. And it may take a form that's very different than what you saw at the beginning. So I think that oftentimes these teachers from these different traditions, and even these emergent new forms of transformational practice like holotropic breath work or the fourfold way, you know, there are a variety of different kind of emergent forms. In all of them, there are skills for holding the multiplicity of different perspectives that people hold. So a capacity to develop what we call worldview literacy, the recognition that we see the world through a lens, and that lens is our worldview, and that we're not the only ones who have a worldview, and that in fact there are lots of differences. So part of transformation in terms of outcome is our capacity to begin to sit with difference in worldview. And then it's this capacity to hold the paradox between setting intention and ultimately yielding to whatever form it's going to take. And people talk about how important, after a transformational experience, it is to begin to surrender into the goodness of life in whatever form it takes for any of us.
Well, thank you, Marilyn. Actually, my team and I have been undergoing a bit of a visioning for where we're taking our organization and frankly our lives, because there's really no separation on a profound level.
That's what we're all doing, aren't
exactly
we?
Yeah. with Michael Beckwith. Uh-huh. And his life visioning tapes, and his description of surrender really spoke to me. And he used the word yielding very specifically, but in his case he described it as yielding to excellence. Mm-hmm. And just letting go into our the best of what we have that we could possibly be as human beings. And let go into that. And that's a surrender, because frequently it does require a few limiting beliefs that are said by the wayside.
And there's so many opportunities to begin to live into this. You can think about, you know, the mundane aspects. So, you know, people say, okay, right, you know, the lama who goes off and lives in a cave for 10 years becomes a good meditator. And, you know, I can't give up my life in order to go do that. What we argue in this book is that you don't need to. It's really because the way we're defining transformation is a shift in perspective. You can bring it to any aspect of your life experience. So, you know, I like to talk about road rage as a spiritual practice, where instead of, you know, evoking a very defensive, hostile, aggressive kind of response to somebody who cuts you off, if you can come from a position of compassion, it radically changes not that person's behavior, but your own response to it, your own physiological response. You know, I was driving down the street and there was this lady who was blocking all the traffic. She had a dog in one hand, a dog carrier in the other, and she was weaving in and out of traffic. And I was taking my son off to violin lesson and we were late. And I was, you know, like, what is wrong with this woman? And all of a sudden, I kind of got into the insight that I'd gotten from being with all these masters and thinking, you know, here's an opportunity to practice a little something. And I thought, you know, perhaps something is really wrong with her. And as soon as I shifted from aggression and hostility to compassion and appreciation, it shifted my whole reactivity in my body. And I was able to slow down, give her time to pass. And ultimately, we were a few minutes late, but so was the teacher, and it all worked out. So, you know, these are little things. You can get into situations with an argumentative coworker and begin to see it from a different perspective where you're less reactive. You know, there's lots of opportunities to bring these insights into every aspect of, you know, every part of our life.
We're here with Marilyn Schlitz, who is the VP of Research and Education over at the Institute of Noetic Sciences up in the Novato Petaluma area, and also co-author of a fantastic book called Living Deeply, The Art and Science of Transformation in Everyday Life. And that really is a takeaway here, is that transformation, one, on some level, it's inevitable because it's simply nothing more than change. And it can occur in everyday life, so we don't have to do the llama thing in the cave and levitate and do that in order to have meaningful, deep transformation in our lives, right?
And you're just— That's right. And I think there are things we can do to invite it in. You know, taking even 10 minutes to be quiet doesn't mean you have to practice a particular kind of meditation. But as you begin to shift to that inner authority, it helps to develop some practices or time in the day when you can reflect and integrate a lot of the complexities of what we're dealing with as we're bombarded by, you know, these weapons of mass distraction on a routine basis.
I love that. Perfect, perfect. Weapons of mass distraction.
You know, and we're all facing it. And I think that it is a time of acceleration. It's a time that is enormously demanding on us as, you know, we have the convergence of all the insights and accomplishments of science and technology coming together with the, you know, vast array of different kinds of spiritual and religious practices. And in the midst of racing from one thing to another, I think we're all called to meaning. You know, we are meaning-making creatures. And I think that taking the time to center ourselves and, you know, to live into some of the insights that these different teachers offer, I think it can really help us. The other thing we did is to create a DVD, and it's also called Living Deeply, Transformational Practices from the World's Wisdom Traditions. And it's 9 practices from different world traditions that allow you in the course of 8 or 9 minutes to experience a little something from the Himalayan yogic tradition of Swami Veda, or from a zikr of an Islamic Sufi practitioner, or a loving kindness meditation from Sylvia Borstein, a Buddhist practitioner. We do a Eucharist ritual with Father Tiso, a Catholic priest. So there's an array of different kinds of practices. And the reason we did this is to offer people the opportunity to bring it into their home and to learn a little something about different tools that you can use to begin to facilitate and cultivate this kind of transformation in your life.
And we can get that DVD through the Noetic Sciences or through you
and
personally?
Through Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble has it, and you just have to ask for it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You know, time is rapidly coming to a close here, Marilyn. Thank you so much for sharing with us. I've got one final question here. What is your vision for what our world could be?
Well, the project I'm most excited about right now is what we're calling worldview literacy, and it's translating the insights that came from this work on consciousness transformation for the K-12 public school system, and then ultimately taking that out to the national school system, and ultimately, you know, the potential of working with, I was just giving a lecture at the United Nations a couple weeks ago, working with their cyberspace program to take these kinds of tools for how it is that we can navigate change, how we can hold complexity, how we can see through other people's lens of perception about what is meaningful and important to them. So I think there's a variety of skill sets that go into worldview literacy, including, you know, our capacity to think in a way that is holding of those complexities. And so my vision is that we take this out to the kids of the world, and ultimately we begin to shift how we get along with each other and to invite more respect and appreciation into our everyday lives.
Marilyn, thank you so much for joining us. You're great.
Thank you.
We have more Wealth to Share right here on KNEW 910 AM San Francisco.